Good morning, and welcome to the Mental Breakdown Morning Show. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
Happy October 20th. We are more than halfway through the month, almost to November, almost to Halloween.
Sliding toward Halloween.
Which is always a fun
mosquito
time
night.
Yes.
here in Florida, mosquito night.
Well, and speaking of that, this kind of really leads right into the topic for the day. We got a message from our friend Noreen up in New Jersey.
Noreen.
Who laughs when we talk about the weather. But one thing she did mention is that it has been uncharacteristically warm in her area of New Jersey.
See?
It has been in the 80s.
Noreen, I walked
it's
out
cool
of my
here.
I left in my the house 80s. This morning and I thought, gee, it's kind of cool out here. It was like 81. It's kind of nice, refreshing change in the weather. Mm-hmm. So
it's,
to hear
it's,
from you,
it's warm. That it's a great testament to perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have those comparisons,
right?
81 degrees here is very cool compared to 99.
A refreshing change.
It's very crisp. But you know what? Noreen mentioned something in her message that I think is a fantastic question that we should spend a couple minutes on. Mm-hmm. And she asked, I'll paraphrase, but she asked, when it comes to conditions like depression and some of the other things, why is it that we call them mental disorders when we know that there's a brain basis to them? Mm-hmm. Why don't we call them brain disorders? And Noreen, that's a fantastic question. Because
it goes back to 1957?
I don't know. That was before my time.
It goes back to 1957. The first edition.
Right, the Diagnostic and Statistical
and
Manual.
And they called it the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders.
Right.
Because back in the 50s, we hadn't yet realized, well, some people knew.
Right.
But most people didn't realize that these disorders were brain-based.
Right.
The things like depression and obsessive-compulsive disorder had a neurobiological component
right.
to them.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, certainly, so we have that root in history
right.
from the way that they just happened to start because we didn't have the neuroimaging and we didn't have that level of understanding at that time that we do now.
Yeah.
Again, some people did. Brodmann and some of those guys did
yeah,
a really
early,
good job of
the early neurosurgeons,
right.
you know, and a few people knew. But
again, most of what they knew was post-mortem.
Right.
So they didn't know, you know, they looked at the characteristics of a person when they were alive. And then when they died, they would look at their brain and they would start trying to make some of those connections.
It wasn't until 1968 when the first CT scan went into use. So prior to 19, we had no way of looking at the brain,
right?
In a living
brain,
person
yeah.
Until then, all of our work with the brain was done on autopsy,
right?
Okay, and we would and you don't find frank brain damage
mm-hmm,
with
mm-hmm.
most mental disorders,
right?
What were called mental disorders at the time,
right? And I think that's the other part that even brings us to more current, even though we have the neuroimaging techniques that we have now. The problem is that nothing is diagnostic. You can't look at an imaging study or you can't look at a brain itself and say that's the brain of a person with ADHD or depression or anything like that.
Students always ask that question. They say, well, why can't we just take kids with dyslexia and do these tests on
right.
them? Well, because the single image of mm-hmm. one person doesn't tell you that.
Right.
It's that as a group, children or adults, people with dyslexia seem to have difficulties in these areas. Not every person, but as a group.
Right.
And so the neuroimaging that we have today are research tools.
Right.
They're not clinical tools, which means we can't use them to diagnose the disorder in a single person.
Right. It's a lot of correlational mm-hmm. research. And you're right. You know, even though we look at aggregated data
mm-hmm.
From lots of different people and we can say these are the trends for this, the individual brain does vary.
Right.
And so for me, for example, my brain may function in this particular way. Your brain probably functions in a very different way.
And may even look different.
And would look different, right? Even though we may present with the same behaviors and the same skills and the same overall presentation. So the science hasn't quite gotten us to the point where we can say, you know, this is the brain region that causes this, or this is the brain region that causes that, right, to the point where we can actually say that this is a brain-based, well, that we would necessitate a change in categorization of these, because I think that's going to be a very slow process.
It is.
I mean, there are there are some of us who refer to them as brain-based disorders.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I had an argument with a person at an insurance company not long ago about the biological bases of ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And the insurance company was saying, no, it's, you know, we only reimburse that code for neurobiological disorders. And I said, well, I'm talking about ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
We don't consider that a neurobiological disorder. And so I cited, as I try to do, cited some research. I said, yeah, you know, I understand what you're saying, but our policy, we just don't see it that way.
Right.
So,
and the other problem with neurobiology is that when you talk about the brain, you're talking about three different ways of looking at it, because mm-hmm. there could be a structural right. problem. Okay, some things are structural.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a brain structure might be smaller or larger or missing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a structural problem, anatomical problem. There's a second problem. It could be chemical.
Mm-hmm.
You have over 100 chemicals racketing around in your brain at any one time. They vary from day to day in the amount of each one, but it might be a chemical problem.
Right.
For example, we know that schizophrenia is an overproduction of dopamine in the frontal lobe,
right? Okay?
Whereas ADHD is an underproduction.
And even though we've known that, and this is just another example of how we just don't know enough, even though we've known and have treated schizophrenia as an overproduction or hyperdopaminergic disorder for, you know, 50 years.
Right. At least.
Research now is saying, could be glutamate.
Right. It could be something else.
It could be this other neurotransmitter. And so, you know, we're still really trying to work that out. And you know, going on, the third area is electrical.
Right.
You know,
our
brain
is an electrical abnormality.
It is an electrical organ.
You know, we know from research that we did at the University of Georgia that the frontal lobes in children with ADHD produce a little less electricity.
Right.
Okay. So maybe it's an electrical problem. So the diagnostic questions for any of these disorders, like schizophrenia, it could be a structural problem, could mm-hmm. be a chemical problem, or could be an electrical problem. So it's been though we're constantly refining these techniques, this is really in its infancy,
right.
And we just don't know. However, I think there is consensus now that many of the disorders that are in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders are neurobiological.
Right.
The issue that really pops up are the personality disorders.
Right.
They're a little harder to pin down.
Right.
Through neuroimaging.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an excellent question.
Right.
That she poses.
And I think that, you know, if we decided to go even farther with it, you know, yes, it's a brain based disorder.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that there's a genetic component to it.
Yeah.
So should these be considered genetic disorders? Because we know that the prevalency of these conditions significantly increase if there's another, especially very close family member with the same condition.
Right.
So,
the practical problem that this raises is, why don't we have parity? If these are biological disorders, are they any less biological than a metabolic disorder or a neuromuscular disorder?
Right.
Or a cardiac disorder.
Right. Yeah, there was the paper that came out just recently, an article that was published either today or yesterday that said, 56% of people with mental health conditions don't have coverage to receive treatment.
They don't get treatment. You know, we wouldn't tolerate that for any other disorder, any other medical problem.
Right.
That would be unconscionable that we would say, well, 56% of people with diabetes don't get treatment.
Right.
Because they don't have insurance coverage, or we don't do that.
Well, and it wouldn't even be that specific. It would be 56% of people with endocrine disorders, endocrine-based disorders, or people with cardiac problems.
Right.
Well, that, because, you know, that's a broad class of conditions, mental illness, mental health conditions. That's a broad class.
But you fall into this class. You know, we treat diabetes, but we don't treat any other metabolic disorders.
Right.
You know, or we'll reimburse for diabetes, but we won't reimburse for any other metabolic disorder.
Yeah.
You know, it would be unthinkable.
So it's you know, I think, Noreen, that your question not only is fantastic, but it really raises a lot of these other questions and concerns and issues, because it is absolutely the case that because we refer to them as mental conditions, or it's our perspective, I think, that because we refer to them as mental illnesses or mental health conditions, that's why they don't get the attention and the support and the reimbursement and the coverage that they warrant.
Right. Yeah. So, we also we don't have a. It's also a fiscal policy, socio-political or fiscal policy, to reimburse for these kinds of things. That's another thing that in our profession that we need to work on.
Yeah.
We take advantage of some, but not all. So we have to figure out a way to have. To really have parity, so that we have insurance for what we now call mental health disorders, just as we have insurance for what are called physical or medical problems.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, again, great question, Noreen. And you know, just as Noreen did, we would encourage anyone to write in with questions or concerns. We had a completely different thing we were going to talk about today, but we got that message from Noreen yesterday, and it was a fantastic question. So we thought we would talk about that this morning. So. Mm-hmm. I hope you guys all have a great day today.
Great Thursday.
And, you know, get out and exercise a little bit. Get out and make sure you're eating well.
I exercised yesterday. Yes.
Great job.
Burned up 38 calories.
38.
I was on a bike, you know, that kept track of it.
38 calories.
For 10 minutes. I think it was a little more than 38 calories. But, you know, you pedal for like an hour and a half and you burn up less than 100 calories.
Yeah.
I mean, far fewer than 100 calories.
Yeah.
And so you say, well, that's a half a slice of bread, you know, after 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's why that calories in versus calories out approach doesn't work. Wow. Well, that's a topic.
Another topic.
All right, so you all have a great day, and we will see you bright and early tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow's Friday.
Tomorrow's Friday.